You're listening to Everything is Workable, a podcast that examines how every experience, every situation, every moment is an opportunity to work with our mind. I'm your host, Caitlin Hatch, creative polymath and dedicated consumer of Dharma talks, Dharma books, self-help books, and the wisdom of others. I started this podcast as a way of showing my gratitude for these teachings and to expand my own understanding. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hello again from Sydney, Australia, where lorikeets squawk and motorboats will occasionally putter by in the harbour near my flat, hence the noises that you're getting. Right. This episode is basically an extension of the last one, which was all about differentiating between a reason and an excuse, or more accurately, not using reasons as excuses. I realized that as I was writing and recording that episode, I'm pretty passionate about this as a subject. And so I really want to get more into it, really dig into it this episode, by offering an essential practice tool. I think I provided enough examples of the importance of not using reasons for our behavior to excuse our behavior, covered that off pretty well in the last episode, basically just saying when we excuse poor behavior, it doesn't invite us to change it. But when we look at the reasons for our poor behavior, we can change those reasons. So if you didn't listen to last week's episode, please do. For everyone who did, here's your incredibly valuable practice tool. One of the greatest ones that I have in my toolkit. Knowing how to admit that you're wrong. From the get-go, I want to emphasize that while this isn't easy, not by a long shot, it's probably one of the most transformative and beneficial things we can learn to do. I also want to say that this is not about laying guilt trips or feeling crappy about ourselves. It's about ownership. Being able to admit that we're wrong is about being able to take something new on board. This kind of practice, the ability to do this, it's like a superpower. It leads to fearlessness. I did a whole episode on that too, in case you missed it. When we can admit that we're wrong, that comes from a place of not trying to protect our ego. And when I say ego here, I'm not talking about the Freudian concept, but the Buddhist one, which can be a little bit difficult to grasp, I think, largely because it challenges our sense of self by stating outright that there is no self. It can be a little bit problematic for people who might be struggling with confidence issues. But this isn't about not having confidence. Finding the self is a fun project. It's one that you could embark upon for the rest of your life if you're interested in it. And there's lots of guidance on how to do that. But I digress. Because what I'm getting at here is really just defining ego for the sake of this episode. And to do that, I'm going to take an analogy from Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche. Because, first of all, I find it amusing. And I also really think that it captures the absurdity of ego clinging. Chögyam Trungpa says, having an ego is like a grain of sand standing up in a dune full of grains of sand and saying that it is totally different from every other grain of sand and deserves to be recognized. Basically, the ego is a sense that we are somehow more special than anyone else, and we deserve recognition for that. So a common way that we think that we're special is by having an opinion, capital O. And especially when we've decided that our opinion is right, with a capital R, we think that our opinion is somehow who we are. And therefore, if someone is questioning or challenging our opinion, our right opinion, we tend to think that they're questioning or challenging us as a person, or telling us that we're wrong, not just our opinion. My very wise mother taught me that opinions can't be right or wrong. It's something that has really stayed in my brain. They can't be right or wrong, but they can be informed or misinformed. And our opinion is not the self. It's not who we are. An opinion is merely a thought. And as the Buddha taught, thoughts are like clouds in the sky. They come and go across our mind, but the mind, like the sky, is a vast open space. So being able to admit that we're wrong, to let go of an opinion, or to not see something we think as having inherent rightness to it, means that we're able to change our mind. It allows us to open to new information. So being able to admit we're wrong, to let go of an opinion, or to not see something we think as having inherent rightness to it, means being able to change our mind. It allows us to be open to new information. But it's also quite scary admitting that we're wrong, because it means that we're going to be letting go of that ego clinging, and a lot of us really identify with that specialness. And our ego attachment to an opinion, when we let that go, it can mean that we look like a fool sometimes. It might mean that we have to eat humble pie, as it were, or that we might even have to apologize to someone. These are all things that we tend to cringe and shy away from. Not because we're bad people, but because we so desperately want to believe we're good people that we have difficulties admitting our flaws, our missteps, our failures. Now, I know that I bang on about this a lot, and that's because I don't think it can be said enough. We need to learn to let go of the idea that the world is made up of good and bad people. It isn't. It's made up of people, and people are complicated. We need only look at ourselves to know the truth of this. I'm complicated. I know people tell me that I'm wise quite a lot, and that's really, really flattering. But I'm neurotic and imperfect, and for all of the stuff that I share on this show and how much sense it makes, I don't get it right most of the time. I am totally human, and that means that I mess up. I hurt people even though I set the intention not to every single morning. I can be really super judgy sometimes and hypercritical. I have unconscious biases at play. We all do. But I also know that ultimately my longing is to be a kind, compassionate human being. Being critical has never felt good, and being compassionate always has. I remember that I'm not special for my suffering. I'm no better or worse than anyone else. And that single acts don't make up or determine a whole human being. To remind myself of this, I use the mantra, no one does anything because they want to feel worse. I apply it to myself, I apply it to everyone that I meet. And if that works as a mantra for you to use, then please do use it. But regardless, it's so important to find something to remind yourself not to categorize the people that you meet into good or bad, but to recognize that a human being, one human being, is an entire universe unto themselves. We all have our whole backstory, our personal struggles, loads of stuff that people don't know about or very rarely comes to the surface. No one should be defined by a single word or action or interaction. We shouldn't do it to other people, and we shouldn't do it to ourselves. Which means, when we're wrong, we're not admitting that we're bad. It's about seeing how we're a full human being with great potential, and that while we're capable of doing some really stupid stuff, we're also capable of doing some really amazing things. We have the potential to grow and change, to take in new information, to use that information, to change or inform our opinions and ideas and our actions. We have the potential because we have the choice and the ability to change our mind. There's this really common analogy that's used for a student who thinks they have everything figured out. I think that it originated from Zen, but regardless, I've heard it often enough from lots of different teachers that it's definitely used in Buddhist teachings. The analogy is that you can come across students who think they know everything, they've figured it out, and they're described as a full cup. Like, they're a cup that's absolutely full to the brim, so there's no room for anything more. And this analogy is supposed to invite us to approach everything as though we are empty cups, like waiting to receive new and different ideas. I was thinking about it, and thinking about it in the context of this, about admitting that you're wrong. And the thing is, even with a full cup, you can still put more into it. Like, a full cup, or a full mind, can still receive new and different ideas. It's just gonna be a bit messier. Like, you can pour more liquid into an already full cup, it'll take it. It just is gonna displace what's already there, and that, to my mind, is great. Yes. You know, if I think of myself as a cup that's full, but full of something as malleable as water, because I'm not holding on to anything, then I still have the potential to change my mind. Even if there might be some spillage in the process, and that spillage, you know, it mixes things out. It's probably quite good. The danger might be if, say, that liquid was frozen. Like, you're holding on to an idea so tight that anything that you try to pour into that cup is just going to flow right off the top. To me, that's what I would think of as having a closed mind. So, you can have a full mind, cup full to the brim, and that can be mixed up. But a closed mind is frozen solid. A total unwillingness to even entertain the possibility of an idea that's different to one that we're holding onto really dearly. In the case of such a closed mind, we really do have to tread carefully. I know what's often said about such closed minds is that we really shouldn't waste our breath, and sometimes that's definitely true. Sometimes it's simply not worth it to say anything, and even, in fact, like, doing so could totally reinforce that person's stubbornness about holding on to what they believe and what they think is right. But liquids can melt, water can melt, allowing room for a new liquid to come in a little bit more eventually. The trick is to provide the new information skillfully, to generate some gentle heat in order to turn the ice back into its liquid form. When it comes to other people, and like I love to bang on about, this isn't so much about other people, but about what we can do for ourselves, but when it comes to other people, using that previously mentioned mantra, no one does anything because they want to feel worse, is really, really helpful. Because for me, it reminds me to be really kind in my approach to someone, to be considerate of them as a person. Even if I disagree with their beliefs, or can recognize that their beliefs are harmful or even dangerous, I understand that they're a human being just like me. They want to be happy, they want to be seen, they want to be comfortable, they want to feel safe. But as ever, this is about working with ourselves. Because it's really important not to get stuck on the idea, not to have a closed mind, around the idea that we need to make other people change for our own comfort and our own emotional regulation. That our comfort and our regulation, that's ours to own. I guarantee we all have our own personal frozen cups, and I have a great way to apply heat to those. When I notice that I'm holding on to and identifying with an opinion really, really strongly, I ask myself questions. A question is a first step in the direction of letting go. A powerful question is even better. A provocative question is the best. Any idea or opinion we're holding on to this way can have a number of specific questions that could be used to challenge or loosen things up. I apply that heat, right? But I have a few questions that I have found apply to pretty much anything that I think I know and I think I'm right about. Question one, do I know this is true? Question two, can I definitely and unequivocally know that it's true? When we ask if something is true, we're inviting ourselves to open up to the possibility of change, of thawing the hold that we have on an opinion. But there's still the chance that our ego will reassert itself because the ego is really, really slippery that way. Which is why that second question is so important. And when I ask myself to be certain of something and to see, like, is it my truth? There's almost always hesitation. When we loosen ourselves up this way, when we're willing to change our mind, willing to admit we're wrong, something really, really brilliant happens. We become fearless. If we're comfortable with being wrong, we don't have anything to defend. Take any scandal you've ever read about anywhere in the world. In any case where the accused went to battle to defend their actions, to justify or excuse or cover it up or defer responsibility, whatever it is, that person lost everything. It always gets worse and worse the longer that it drags on. In cases where someone admits their wrongdoing, puts their hands up to it, accepts responsibility, things improve. It stops the witch hunt. Even in cases where a person might have denied something for a really long time, as soon as they start being honest about their misdeeds, it stops being quite such a big deal. Admitting that we're wrong takes the juice out of a scandal. Being able to admit when we're wrong means we get to be bigger than our petty need to be right, or to think that we know an answer, or justify why we did something we knew that we shouldn't have done. And it's nice, because we get to relax our defensive hold on something. Going on the defensive is never comfortable. In fact, that is my measurement for if I'm holding on to something too tightly. I only ever go on the defensive if I think that my need to be right is somehow attached to how people perceive me, and especially if I think that my need to be right will also hinge on someone else needing to be wrong, or someone else validating what I think I know. Being able to admit we're wrong allows us to see that what makes us special isn't what we think we know, but our ability to work with our mind effectively. Every time that I've been able to admit that I was wrong about something, I've been both surprised and humbled. It took the sting out of being called out for my ignorance. I'm not on the back foot and trying to defend it. I'm not digging my heels in. Instead, I'm willing to inform my opinion differently. And then everything is more flexible, more workable, even. Funny that. And it's a reminder as well. Because 100 years ago, people believed a lot of stuff that we know today is wrong. It would be incredibly arrogant for us to think that 100 years from now, when people look back on us, it will be any different. So, just admit that you're wrong. Try it out. You'll feel a lot better. Thank you so much for listening to Everything is Workable. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, share with your friends, or post it to social media. You can also consider becoming a patron, which has really cool perks like getting art prints or a signed book in the post. Just click the green Become a Patron button on the Everything is Workable Podbean page. Thank you as well to the very talented Dexter Britton for sharing his music with the world so that I could use it for this podcast. You can find more of his stuff on www.dexterbritton.co.uk. And you can find more of my stuff at faunawolfcreations.com.